The crimes, the criminals, why did they do it? Who got hurt? Did they meet justice or commit the perfect crime? You'll find all the clues at Jim Harold's Crime Scene.
Welcome to the Crime Scene. I am Jim Harold, and so glad to be with you. Now, there's a word that we throw around a lot when we talk about things like serial killers and so forth. We throw around the word psychopaths. These people are psychopaths. Well, first of all, I'm not even clear that most of us really know what a psychopath is, and that they're not just serial killers, but they're a daily occurrence in our lives, and we may run into them all the time. Maybe not ones that are serial killers, but ones who can wreak just as much devastation. And we have a great guest to talk about that today, Diane Emerson. She is the author of the book Psychopaths in Our Lives, and she created the first online forum for victims of psychopaths over 18 years ago. And she says that although the general public and the media report stories about stranger danger, in reality, a psychopath in your life is likely to damage more lives than the most prolific serial killer, she says. She says, we think of serial killers when we hear the word psychopath, but the vast majority are not in prison, but walking among us. Lacking a conscience, they leave a path of destruction and despair as they pass through life. Diane Emerson, welcome to the program today.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me to be on your program today.
So I guess we should start with a definition, because like a lot of kind of terms that are associated with mental health, we kind of just throw them around willy-nilly and maybe don't know the classic definition. So in your view, what is the definition of a psychopath?
Okay, I will give you the Cliff Notes version. And if anybody wants the whole rundown, Dr. Galcono, who's the leading expert in the field as far as the diagnosing, wrote the foreword to my book, and he did the whole sociopath, psychopath, narcissistic thing. So I'll give you the Cliff Note version. But if anybody would like a full version of it, I think, because it's probably the best one that was ever written. Anyway, so here's the deal. Not all psychopaths, not all narcissistic personality disorders, which is an acquired trait, okay? You can become narcissistic, think selfie sticks, okay? But not all narcissistic personalities are psychopaths, but all psychopaths have narcissistic personality disorder. So that's where you start to divide the lines here. And then when you further divide it, the difference between really them and us is the lack of a conscience. And a person is born with either you're born with a conscience or you're not. It's a genetic deal. So you don't just become a psychopath. You're born that way. And the conscience develops between 3 and 5 years old. So that's where they can start to see some of the actions coming up. And now then they're broken into two groups. Most people refer to sociopaths as ones who are less likely to kill. Okay, well, I don't know. I think they're all likely to kill, but people also kill other people in drunk driving wrecks too. So how I view it is that the psychopaths that I interviewed, two of them preferred the term sociopath because they felt it didn't associate them much with the killer crowd, and one was proud to be a psychopath. So when we think of psychopaths, we usually think of serial killers, like you mentioned. But the real issue is that encompasses 25% of the prison population. However, the catch is that study hasn't been updated in the last 25 years. So this 1 to 3% number you'll read as far as in the general public is, it was extrapolated from this high prison number. So how do you get in prison and how do you stay out of prison? Well, the guys who, or gals, actually there's women too, who are well socialized as children, meaning they come from a better socioeconomical background, they have parents who nurture them, they have parents who work with their behaviors that they start to see as young children, they will be kind of your next corporate executive. The person in a lower socioeconomical situation with not as much focus on parenting will more likely end up in the prison system. So that's really kind of how, and the ones that have always interested me are the ones roaming around. Prison ones are easy to pick out. I mean, it's like shooting fish in a barrel. If I wanted to interview psychopaths in prison, I could just, get interviews with 8 of them, and 4 of them would be psychopaths. But the ones that are the most interesting to me are the ones that are roaming around.
Now, so in other words, to be a psychopath doesn't necessarily mean that you're a serial killer, that you could be what's considered a fine, upstanding citizen, but behind the scenes in just your daily life, you're treating people in a manner in which somebody who has no conscience would treat them. Is that basically the idea?
That's correct. And actually, you know, you start to look at some areas. I mean, they will do things that a person with a conscience won't do, let's say in corporate America. Let's say somebody has to do some ruthless cutting back of staffing and, you know, pretty much dismantling people's lives. A psychopath is really your person for that job because they will sleep fine at night. You or I would probably anguish over it and probably resign with the rest of the people we were firing. The interesting thing is one of the guys that I interviewed three of them because I wanted a balance. Of, we all know by the checklist what the list is, you know, lying, cheating, gaslighting, and all that. But what I wanted to figure out is how they do it. Because I'd heard from victims about what happened to them, but I was always curious about how exactly did they maneuver people into these positions. And normally the victims were, you know, very intelligent, upstanding kind of people that get taken in by these people and come out the other end extremely shattered. And so I was kind of, I was looking for answers to how self-aware were they of these evil actions that they would do against people.
Now let me ask you this. I'm going to give you four instances. I'm not going to mention any names. I'm not going to mention the sex of the person. I'm just going to talk about someone who I knew. And I want to see if this could be a psychopath. I had had a job, and this person I had known and was a big fan of me professionally, and they hired me for a job. They were very excited about having me on board, and that probably lasted 7 or 8 months. And after several months, there were some things that I was being told that I disagreed with. I started to push back respectfully on some things. And this person had always, this person was a position of power who could basically hire and fire. And this person had always talked about other employees. This person doesn't work hard. This person is this. This person is lazy, so forth and so on. I never did like that, but I thought, well, maybe there's a kernel of truth to it. Maybe this person has a point. Then all of a sudden, this person started to shut me out after some pushback on some directives that I didn't think were the right thing, or I thought they were misguided or unrealistic or whatever the case may be. And I even took up, I was kind of in a semi-supervisory role, so I took up for some other employees that I felt that this person was kind of attacking. Now, all of a sudden, I found myself on the other end of it, and I became one of the people that this person had it out for. Needless to say, I didn't last very, in fact, the only time in 20 plus years in the work world that I ever got fired. And, you know, obviously I'm biased. I didn't think there was cause for it, but it didn't surprise me because I'd seen this person do it to other people. But I had always assumed, well, maybe they've got a good reason. I tried to always make excuses in my mind for this person, why they were lashing out at different employees and so forth. And it became very interesting because towards the end, there was almost a total shut off of communication. You know, emails wouldn't be answered. Things would be answered via third parties. It was almost like this person had walled me off and shut me out. But on the other hand, I have to say this person, when I first started, was my biggest fan and my biggest cheerleader. Does that sound like a psychopath?
Yeah, exactly. And here's some of the red flags that were happening along the way for you is that they go after a certain type, okay? And the type they go after are kind and caring people. That's a great trait to have, okay? I'm not suggesting anybody become a hardened, you know, person. But the part of the red flags are this, is that their number one thing, now, the three guys that I interviewed, one was about his work, and man, the stuff he pulled was just hair-raising. And the other two were about relationships. And what it all boils down to is control. So here's my first take on it, is that he had better control over you in the very beginning. And did you spend a lot of time talking to him about your life and your hopes and desires?
Yeah.
See, so what they do is in the initial phase is that it's like a courting, even though, you know, it's not like dating, but what they're doing is they're mining you for information. And I was just shocked at how self-aware they are of this process. So what they said to me was, well, we have to figure out the keys to the safe before we can break in. So people will report back and say, you know, this person really listens to me and they really get you to bond with them. Well, they don't care about you. What they care about is what you can tell them that they can then use to turn against you later. So they become your best friend, and then that's what becomes very hurtful to a kind and caring person in the end, because you really believed in this person. And in many ways that they were probably setting you up to behave towards these people that they were also targeting. So it's all a big dance to them, and they have to have data to attack. So they're very good listeners, very, very keen listeners. And actually, you know, that's part of the reason for my book, is because a lot of people are wounded out there because they had this thing happen in their life, which kind of will carry you around until you figure out, hey, it really wasn't me, because they leave you with this very distinct, ugly, ugly, ugly back of your mind kind of thinking that it was about you. And in reality, it wasn't about you. It was about their need to control, and you were just a... One guy referred to them as his puppets in his work environment. And he had a whole chain of them. I mean, right. He had a guy who reported to him about different people. He would feed this guy information, who would then go out and talk about him to other people about maybe they misunderstood him, and people are starting to raise red flags. No, you misunderstood it wrong, because he's really... So they have a whole structure that they set up in order to manipulate. And you want to hear a really good work story?
Sure.
Since you brought up work? Okay. Bill is one of the people I interviewed. Three. Two of them were formally diagnosed, and one was self-diagnosed. But there's no room for thinking the third guy wasn't okay when you read his words. Because I would only interview them in writing, because I felt I would probably get much closer to the truth than anybody has before, because in the past, people write using composite characters, and it's really hard to get a feel for where they're really going with things. And what I found in writing was they would start off with what was probably what they would say to you in person, but then it would evolve down to what they really thought. So he set up this scenario because I was asking them for scenarios, and he wanted this woman's job. He works in some government somewhere, and he wanted this woman's job, and mm-hmm. the way he set her up was just, I actually felt physically sick a lot of times during these interviews and stuff, and I didn't allow them any access to my emotions, because that's what they feed off of.
Sure.
So I kept my distance, and I would just say things like, oh, well, that's interesting. How exactly did you do that? In other words, I never brought myself into the picture, even though they tried, but I never brought myself into the picture. So I was asking about this, about how he moved up the ladder, right. And what he did was just the creepiest thing on earth. I mean, what he did was he knew these women's buttons, okay, because that's how they do. They learn all your triggers and about your family and all the stuff that they can throw up later. So let's say they're in a cubicle environment where everybody works these days, and so he knows when she gets upset, she starts to flail her hands around, okay? So he's literally... sets her up in a situation so there's a lot of people around who could see but not hear, okay? So he pushes the button and gets her to start showing some sort of visual reaction, the hands and stuff, okay? Then what he does is that, you know, he's confronting her and baiting her, but nobody can hear, but everybody can see. So then after this is over, he then goes around casually to the people who could see but didn't hear. And really, by the time he is done with these people, they all felt like they heard what happened, okay? Because he has now given them his version of the story. And so because of how management would have to fire people, would have to go through these different levels and whatnot. And so when these people were called in to be interviewed about this woman who was in a job that he wanted, they all told the same story because he had fed them the story. But by the time he was finished with them, that's the key to gaslighting. They really felt like they had heard that story. So that's how they related. And then the really diabolical part of it was he had told everybody the story in reverse. Okay, so then when they call her in, her story is the exact opposite, but in reverse of what all these other people have said. So naturally, they fire her. And because she now appears not trustworthy, because she looks like a liar, because her story is reverse of everybody else's story. I mean, it's just so sick that, you know, you just sit there and you think, who could stay awake and dream up this stuff but a psychopath? So that's literally just what I was looking for in my interviews, was their actual techniques. You know, we all can agree mm-hmm. they're liars. We all can agree they're cheaters. But what I wanted to get behind was, how do they pull this off? And how do they keep getting advanced, and how do they stay in relationships, and what kind of people are they after? And I don't know about you, but I thought that was probably one of the sicker stories. I mean, people have commented on my book with things like, man, that was the creepiest book I've ever read, but I learned a lot. Because, yeah, what they do is just so creepy that you can hardly imagine anybody doing that to another person.
Is revenge a part of the picture here? In other words, the sense that I got in my situation was, well, you have disrespected me. You're not going along with what I want to do. So I'm going to cut you out, and I'm going to cut you out quickly and ruthlessly. In fact, this person didn't even have the guts to fire me themselves. They had somebody else do it for them. And I had expressed the sentiment to the person who did fire me that the person in question was a coward. And I do believe this person was a coward, but I will say, actually, I'm quite thankful because everything ended up great. It wasn't immediately, but several years later, this was a part of my evolution as a business person, as a worker, and I decided to strike on my own eventually. And I think if this wouldn't have happened, I would not be what I'm doing today, which I'm far happier at. So I actually would like to thank this person if they happen to hear this. But I mean, is that part of the picture, kind of this revenge? You didn't play along, so I'm going to cut your head off, basically.
1,000%, because it's all about control. One of the guys in relationships, what he would do if it didn't end up in the way that he wanted it to end, he would actually circle back, okay, re-engage this person who had been in a physical relationship, re-engage this person, and then shatter them to the core before he left, because it's control. So it didn't end the way he wanted to the first time. So he made sure that that person was shattered by the time he walked out the next time. So, yeah, every road, when you read their stories, I don't know if you have a chance to read my book, but every road leads back to control. It's all about control. That's why. And we have a disconnect as a society. Like, we're drawn like moths to Dateline shows and stuff, okay? Like,
yes.
I love Keith Morrison, okay?
Yes. I think of that Saturday Night Live skit with Bill Hader, who did a great imitation of Keith Morrison, which, if you've seen it, you know what I'm talking about. It's kind of funny.
He would be one guy that I wouldn't want to pull up my driveway for an interview, okay?
No,
life would have gone terribly bad. But here's the disconnect, the way I see it, is that those shows are extraordinarily popular, okay? And they all involve the kind of psychopath that I write about, the kind who goes to work every day, the kind who has kids and a family and a nice little, van in the driveway and mows the lawn every Saturday. But yet, people will watch those shows, and where it always goes off the rail is when the spouse, either male or female, decides they have had enough and want to get a divorce, okay? So that's where sleeping under the same roof becomes very dangerous, and that's where the Dateline show usually comes in, because
right.
somebody got killed.
Right.
Well, you have to ask yourself a few questions. Number one is, what drove it to that point? Okay, the main thing is they lost control of that person. They were no longer able to manipulate that person. That person was trying to grab control of their own life and get away from this person, okay? So the slipping of control is where things can get really dicey. So, yeah, that's why they'll cut you off if they can't control you. And if you're in a personal relationship, if it might bring shame to them, to the public, or whatever their image may be, that's where the control. So we have a disconnect. I mean, we're fascinated by evil, but then yet it can be sitting right next to us, and we'll kind of, like, overlook it.
So what are the telltale signs? How do we know that we're dealing with a sociopath? Because, I mean, even in the case I gave you, I'm still second guessing myself. Well, maybe I'm being a little harsh. You know, the thing is, what are the things that pretty much check it off as being a sociopath?
Well, one thing that victims have all said over the years is that their first instinct was something was wrong. I call that they painted those red flags white. Okay. So if you follow your instincts, I think, let's say you're looking back at relationships in your life, and maybe I'm trying to bring peace to people's lives is my goal, because if you can look back at it and see that you had no part in it and that train was running off the tracks no matter what you did, hopefully you can move on and have a happier life. But what happens is that I was always amazed over the years, because victims would say things like, he said he has a really dark side, and just kind of laugh it off, okay? And these guys actually said the exact same thing. They said, I tell people I have a dark side, and they just kind of punch me and laugh. So, just pay attention. just pay very close attention. They will want to rush in and know too much about you, and you'll walk away from the dinner, or if it's a personal involvement, you'll walk away feeling like, you know, you had a really good therapy session because, man, this person really listened to you. Well, there's a reason for that, okay? They don't think you're that interesting. They're interested because they want to know how to control you. So and people these days, I think, are falling more and more into that trap because as we become more disconnected as a society by texting only, nobody gets on the phone anymore, you're removing a lot of the visual cues. And so it makes it easier for them to find their way into your life. So some of the first clues would be pay attention to your gut, okay? If it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. I mean, every Ponzi scheme is run by a psychopath.
Mm-hmm.
People want to get as rich as that guy is. But really, it's a house of cards. So they can talk them into doing extraordinary things, you know, mortgaging their house, I mean, your safety and all that stuff, because you get pulled in, and then you start pulling your friends in because you get caught up into whatever their thing is. So when things start moving too fast, step back. Step back and listen. If you find yourself in those situations, really try to start working on your boundaries, because I start to sound like I'm a paranoid, suspicious person, and I'm really not. But really, if you were to tell me those kinds of things in a business or a personal relationship, I would make very serious note of it. I mean, laughter wouldn't be the first thing that came to my mind. You tell me you're evil, and I would probably listen to you rather than laugh it off. So they do give cues along the way, and in my book, they actually went through a whole list of things that they do. They will say, like, for example, that they have ways of throwing you off. So let's say you find out that so-and-so was cheating on you. And you have solid proof of it, okay? By using gaslighting techniques, by the time you end that conversation, you'll be the bad guy.
Explain to people what gaslighting is.
Well, gaslighting originated from my very favorite movie in 1944-45 with Ingrid Bergman and Charles Boyer. And it's really a matter of gaslighting is altering your reality to then become a fact. And back then, he would do things like flicker the gas lights and stuff and then claim that they weren't flickering. But it's fascinating. So that's where the term came from. So they do things to a person to start to throw you off balance, everything from moving your keys around, maybe going into your system and changing appointments around, and start to lull you into feeling like you're losing a grip on things in a very subtle way. Like, you know, your mind is like a sieve. It's like, you told me that you did this, and now you're saying that. So pretty soon you start thinking, yeah, I mean, there's kind of a lot of evidence racking up that maybe something's gone wrong with me. All the way to the point of one of the guys, the most horrifying one, they were all pretty horrifying, actually. He actually gives his victims antidepressants and mood stabilizers, slips it into the thing, because that,
oh my goodness.
If you've had any experience with taking antidepressants, you know that they rewire your brain. So the goal there was that the family and friends didn't particularly like him. So then he starts messing with your brain chemistry. And then pretty soon, you're like a rocking boat, unable to really do much. And then he becomes a savior. So then people start to perceive him as your savior. But really, he's in the end the one who's sabotaging you. So they actually had very well calculated out lists of things that they do. For example, let's say you kept getting back to the catching them cheating part as an example. You know it. You saw it. You know it's real, okay? By the time you're done with that conversation, they will have done a bunch of different things to you. They might throw into your face what a lousy childhood you had and being raised by alcoholics. Your perception is so bad. You're so untrusting with people. And pretty soon you're begging them for forgiveness. I mean, that's how they twist things around. Or they will start to tell you that you're crazy and that it didn't really happen. Or if you really catch them cold, they might say something like, well, I was victimized as a child. How can you not believe me? Well, really? If their profile person they're after is a kind and caring person, where are you going to go from there? Are you going to then really lay into the person who's now saying, well, I was abused and you don't understand my childhood? So they have just a myriad of ways to flicker things back onto you. And really, it just seems extraordinary, but it works. And it gets people convinced that, and they start isolating you from family and friends, and probably in the work environment, you probably found yourself getting more isolated from other people because really this person is always the victim. And the contrary of that is they're actually victimizing people while they're yelling, I'm a victim, I'm a victim. So if you can educate yourself, that was my goal, is to help people educate themselves. So when you see this stuff start to come, figure out a way to get away. It's never going to change. This person has a genetic disorder, and it's not mental illness. It's a personality disorder.
So it's not mental. That was the thing I was going to ask you.
No.
I mean, my thought is if somebody's mentally ill, now, obviously, to me, if somebody's crossed the Rubicon of violence, I have no sympathy for them. But short of that, is it something that we can treat in any way, or they're basically, in your view, hopeless cases?
No, here's the deal. The more that the parents socialize them, the probably the less likely they will be to end up in prison, but the more likely they'll devastate more lives. It falls under the personality disorder cluster. So it is not mental illness. It has nothing to do with mental illness. It falls in the same group as narcissists, borderline personality, and psychopaths. It's not anything that is, people refer to them as crazy. They are far from crazy. They will make you crazy. I can guarantee you that. Stay with one of them long enough, and you will actually be qualified as a completely insane person when they're done with you. You will be so spun around. But no, they're not crazy. It's all very, very, and the level of description they go through in my book is so calculating that, you know, I must say it was kind of a creepy time when I was interviewing them, to say the least, because there were so many just weird little things that they do that you think, geez, you know, who could think of this kind of stuff? And God, I feel so sorry for the people in their lives.
How common is this?
Well, I think that they're highly common. I'm certainly not a researcher that comes up with statistics, but I can do a thing in my own mind, the ones that I met in my own life. And I believe that when I read this number, 1% to 3%, that's from studies from 25 years ago. That's where they came up with that 25% of the prison population. So I think they're very common. I'd probably go as high as 10% or more of the population. And one of the things that one of them said, which is keeps always comes back to my mind, is he said, you know, the world is becoming more like me than you.
Interesting.
Yeah, so, well, let me look around. Do you think these people that crashed the economy and still got big bonuses were good citizens and solid, right, upstanding people?
Right.
None of them were mentally ill. They weren't on some sort of bipolar rant when they crashed the economy and took out bonuses and got a bunch of people to buy houses they couldn't afford. It was calculated. To do that kind of calculations, you have to be lacking a conscience. I mean, I know I wouldn't be in that business, and I highly doubt that you would either. So society is moving toward actually rewarding that kind of behavior. Now, I won't name names, but there's a guy who was heading this hospital, and interestingly enough, he had been in charge of a hospital where I had lived in Sedona, and finally the hospital lost accreditation. That's what the turning point was, getting rid of him. He ended up at another next bigger hospital. Took him 5 years to throw that one into the gutter, and then he went on to an even bigger one this last year. And anybody with the Google can figure out within a minute or two what his past was, but he still got jobs. Well, you have to ask yourself, do these other people that are doing the hiring for this, you know, $1 million a year job, do they not know how to use Google? I mean, it took me 1 minute to figure it out. It took the doctors and the community, you know, everybody was Googling, everybody knew, but yet the board kept him around because they serve a purpose. They do those nasty jobs that other, it's all about money.
Right. I mean, to me, in some ways, a psychopath would be, in some instances, maybe considered by Wall Street, for example, as the perfect executive, because they would make the, quote, tough decisions. You know, they wouldn't worry about closing a plant and moving it to some far off land if you could get labor for pennies on a dollar or something like that, cut costs and those kind of things. So it seemed like they'd be almost the perfect people for some of those jobs.
Well, they are, because they'll dip even deeper. They will get people, when the ship is going down, to turn their retirement into buying stocks in the company. So by the time the ship is down, everybody's been taken with it. So they go beyond just maybe a business decision to move production offshore, okay? They will go beyond that and make sure that they have, you know, which I don't understand why we allow this to happen, but for example, why can somebody come in, like in some cities that have gone under, like Detroit and stuff, how can it ever happen that the police and teachers lose all their pensions and stuff because somebody was bankrolling their money? How do we as a society even just sit back and go, well, didn't happen to me? So, yes, they go further than just moving your manufacturing. I did manufacturing many years ago in China. Well, it was the only place for this certain product design that I did for the manufacturing.
Right.
But I didn't move it there and take down all my employees and take away their pensions and make sure they, you know, by the time they turn 55, they were out of a job and ruin their credit rating so they could never find work, or convincing them to mortgage their house to help me finance a thing. So there's a big line between making a business decision and a brutally crushing, life-altering decision for other people.
True.
And that's where they excel.
So if folks want to pick up on this book and read about it, because it is fascinating, you have these three psychopaths that you corresponded with, and you kind of got the who, what, where, and why, and kind of how they work and why they work. Fascinating case studies in each of the cases, and you got in deep and got the straight scoop. Where can people go and get the information and get the book?
Well, the easiest thing just to remember is it's Diane with two N's. So if you Google Diane with one N, you won't get me. But it's Diane, D-I-A-N-N-E, Emerson, E-M-E-R-S-O-N. It's available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and iBooks. But the Amazon is the only place that has it in paperback. Personally, I'm not an iBook reader, but a lot of people are, and that's where the industry is moving. But there's a lot to unpack with their words. So the simplest thing to do, I have a little thing. I've not really been into social media, I mean, for obvious reasons. I really don't want my life mixed up with people that I've interviewed. So I do have a small Facebook page, which I will update with, you know, interviews and whatnot. But, yeah, if you look up Diane Emerson, I'll pop up on the first Google page. Or if you look on Amazon under Psychopaths in Our Lives, my book will show up. And then you have your choice of either the e-version or the paperback version. And I sent you a copy. What
yes.
do you think about the eyes on the cover?
Yes, very penetrating. Very penetrating. Kind of scares me a little bit there, but I think that's kind of the idea. The idea that this person's looking right through you, and they've got their sights on you.
Yeah, the interesting backside to that was a lot of books about this topic, A, have used composite characters, which really misses the mark, but B, a lot of them have used eyes for their covers. So I was trying to figure out what they knew about things that we knew. Like, for example, if you've ever seen one get angry, their eyes turn black and evil, and you feel like you're looking into the eyes of the devil, a look you'll never forget. So when I was asking them questions about the eyes, all they could tell me was what people told them. Like, you were scary, you know, you really scared me, you were really evil looking, and one of them, because they always have to know everything, said, well, next time I get mad, I'll have to look in a mirror. Well, anyway, so during this conversation, one of them actually sent me a picture of his eyes, and I was like, whoa. So I sent it around to a few of my friends, and I said, what's your first reaction when you look at these eyes? And they think, evil. And I said, good, got my cover. Now, here's the other thing. From my forum years, I brought up a conversation with people about, have you ever looked at pictures of your past relationships and look at their eyes? And people were very fascinating. They came back with answers, because if you're ever in doubt, this is just something that I've kind of uncovered. If you look at a picture of a psychopath and a group of people, there's a disconnect there. Okay, there's a disconnect between the eyes and the smile. So people start looking back at their old relationship pictures and kind of go, whoa, never noticed that before. So I imagine if you met this guy that's on my cover in person, you probably wouldn't see the same thing you see in the picture. There's something about the transformation that happens when you take a picture of their eyes, that if you were meeting this guy for the first time, you probably wouldn't have that, ooh, evil, creep feeling to looking at his eyes. So photos actually kind of can help to be a guide, too, just a little aside here. Just look at pictures of them and see, you know, everybody else in the picture will have a very natural smile. The eyes connect with the lips and that kind of thing. And they look different in pictures. So, yeah, in person, I'm sure he probably looks like a perfectly charming, attractive guy. But when you just look at his eyes, you think, ew. So that is another clue. If you ever see one unmasked, the eyes will become huge and black and dilated. Like, and all of a sudden, it's like no one's home, but you're talking to the devil. Now, the better ones don't unmask that easily. Like, your guy took like 7 or 8 months to come forward, right, before you start to kind of put the pieces together.
Right.
The better they are, the longer it'll take for them to, when they lose a grip on things, that's called the unmasking, and that's when you'll see the evil. And that's when they'll say and do extraordinary things, that when you bring them up later, they have a whole series of things that'll convince you that you didn't really witness what you witnessed. So the eyes are really, in my mind, the pathway to the soul. And I personally have seen a few of them unmask over the years. Fortunately, I've never lived with one or, you know, married to one, but I've had instances in life that I've run across a few, and when they unmask, I mean, it is a creepy, creepy, creepy thing, something that you never forget. And here again, pay attention. If you get into a conflict with one and you see that black look come over their eyes and stuff, it's not a good time to continue the argument. It's just because you're never, it's something you're never going to win. And I'm a kind of person who likes, always likes a positive outcome. But it is a situation that you need to learn what the things are, how they operate, and realize that you're never going to win. So learn to recognize the signs and get out, because a lot of people will say, well, I got this one beat. I'm going to stay there. I'm going to stay in this job, or I'm going to stay in this relationship, and I'm going to win. No, I'm sorry. You're setting yourself up for a really horrible, horrible life adventure.
Makes sense. I mean, I'm glad that my situation worked out the way it did, and we'll leave it at that. Diane Emerson, the book is Psychopaths in Our Lives, and it consists of interviews with three psychopaths, and we get some real insight there. Diane, thank you for joining us today.
Hey, it was a pleasure, and thank you so much. And hey, if you ever want to do a call-in show, I'd love to come back.
Sounds good, and thank you for tuning in to The Crime Scene. And as we learned today, it's very important. Be careful out there. We'll talk to you next time. Have a great week, everybody. Bye-bye.